So as we said, Patricia will be speaking on steps 10 and 11, which are continue to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it, and sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. So Patricia, I invite you up here.
My name is Patricia. I'm an alcoholic. My sober date is March 13th, 1989. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah. My group is Larchmont, New York. Paige, thanks for mentioning about Levi. I read the obituary this morning, and I remembered talking to him 2 weeks ago at Glad You're Here group. And I don't know if he was new or just coming back, but the obituary mentioned that he had, that he was a member of AA and that he suffered from depression. And I know for me, those two were inextricably linked. And we all know about that. So last week we finished up with step 8. Oh, by the way, I was just writing all this stuff like at 4:30 as I was coming over here, so I'm a little fragmented. So, mea culpa. We finished up step 8 and 9 last week, and we made amends and we cleared up the past. And so, technically, if our amends are finished, we're starting fresh with 10, 11, and 12. Some people call them the maintenance step, and I think that's true. I also think they're the growth step. Because I've probably gotten more from step 10 in terms of growing, and step 7 probably, and step 12. And if I stand up here long enough, it'll be all the steps. But anyhow, let me start with 10. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. This was very hard for me, this step. I grew up in a family that had a history of criticizing, blaming, it was somebody else's fault. We usually blamed it on my third sister, who was very quiet. I never heard either of my parents make an amend. In fact, it was quite common for them to blame us for something they were responsible for. I guess the culture was that it just wasn't safe to be wrong in my house. And so, we never said we were wrong. I did have the Catholic tradition of confession, but it meant absolutely nothing to me. I used to go and make up my sins, three of this, two of that, and then come out and say the Hail Marys and Our Father, and that was it. The 12 and 12 says there are cases where our ancient enemy rationalization has stepped in and justified conduct which was really wrong. The temptation here is to imagine that we had good motives and reasons when we really didn't. And I was, an expert at rationalizations. Even when I was drinking, when I wasn't drinking, most of the time. For me, the two words that are important in the step are the word continued, because it's a lifelong process, and that it's a personal inventory. Like I said, I was good at blaming, and I had to change my mind around the fact that I had to take my inventory regardless of what other people had done. And I think about the word new in the big book. The word new is mentioned so many times, a new freedom, a new happiness, etc. And for me, it was that new way of thinking. I had to start thinking about the fact that I had to look at myself when I was wrong and apologize and stop blaming other people. So I had to change from what they did to me to what I did to them. And that's been kind of a gradual process. I needed a sponsor to help me with that. I need a sponsor today to help me with that. Although sometimes, you know, just somebody that I know in AA can help me. It doesn't have to be a sponsor. Sometimes it's not an AA person that helps me. Somebody, you know, I have a lot of friends with good wisdom, and, you know, I'm not afraid now because I know my thinking can be way off. So the book talks about two kinds of inventory, the spot check and the one at night. For me, it's mostly the spot check. And that's when I start hearing in my head the word idiot or knucklehead. I know I'm disturbed and I need to do a spot check inventory. I don't have to get to the point where I want to kill somebody now. You know, when I first came in, I was disturbed 1,000 times a day. Now it's down to maybe 5 or 10 times a day. And I don't think it'll ever get to zero, frankly. So the big book says that we, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. For me, I would add, when I hear myself getting annoyed or saying the word idiot, that's a sign for me. Let me see if I said it all. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, the book gives us the instructions. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with somebody immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. I found that if I'm doing a good job with this step, I can avoid having to make amends, because I can catch myself before I shoot my mouth off or I write something that I shouldn't. Why do we do this? Well, for me, if I'm disturbed, I have no channel with God. You know, that disturbance is occupying every gray cell I have. It's how we learn about what our chronic defects are that we can then go to step 7 and ask for help. There's the line in the big book, you know, the dreaded line we all hate about the spiritual axiom. And really no discussion is complete if I didn't mention the spiritual axiom. It is a spiritual axiom that every time we are disturbed, every time, no matter what the cause, there is something wrong with us. If somebody hurts us and we are sore, we are wrong also. But are there no exceptions to this rule? What about justifiable anger? If anybody cheats us, aren't we entitled to be mad? And here Bill knew about our ratty little brain, because he answers, you know, he answers before we can ask. Can we be properly angry with self-righteous folk? For us of AA, these are dangerous exceptions. We have found that justified anger ought to be left to those better qualified to handle it. So, when I feel disturbed and I talk to somebody about it, or I talk to a sponsee because they're disturbed, it's usually one of two things, one of two answers. It's very simple. Either make an amend or forgive them. There isn't much daylight between one of those two, you know. When I was drinking and I was disturbed, my first thought was to get even. You know, how am I going to get even? Or I would use my sarcastic mouth to cut people off at the knees. And I could do that very quickly, you know. Or the third thing I would do, I'd stuff it and I'd get even with them later. Now, when I'm disturbed, my top priority is to get undisturbed. I just can't stay in that. So what do I do? Well, you know, usually I talk to somebody about it. Sometimes I say the Serenity Prayer. In my group, they say if something's bothering you, you tell somebody about it 3 times, and by the time you said it the 3rd time, you're so bored with it, it loses its power over you. And then I tried to remember that line that I love that says, we're not the only ones bedeviled by sick emotions. Certain people will put me in an uncomfortable position, and I'm not going to say who they are because this is on tape. When I first got sober, my first reaction was to try to change them. You know, if I could just educate them. And that obviously didn't work. And then I would try not to react. But that was kind of a white-knuckling thing. You know, I would find myself just holding on not to react. And then as time went on, I would limit my time with them. You know, 30 minutes sometimes. And now... I've evolved to the point that sometimes, not always, but sometimes I can look at them as an opportunity for growth. You know, that they're, whatever is going on with them gives me an opportunity for growth. So, step 10 is a way really to enter the plan of continuous growth. Joe McHugh, you know, the Joe McHugh book says, everything is growing or deteriorating. So, you know, 10 follows 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. 4 was started with the basis for this when we did an inventory. And they talk about doing this step with the columns, just like the 4th step. And what I did to finish up with this is I thought about a couple of experiences I've had with this step to give as examples. And one of them I use rather cautiously because it involves my brother, who's also in the rooms and who's been listening to these tapes. But we were having a 100th birthday party for my mother in last December. And after much discussion, my brother and I decided that we would handle it. We would keep, you know, the rest of the siblings out of it. We would do it. And we really pulled out all the stops on this birthday party. You know, we had, it was at the Sheraton, we had cake testings, we tested six or eight different cakes. You know, I hired people from the Erie Philharmonic to play. You know, we had, I mean, the Bishop was there, Joe Schember was there. It was like a production. There was like 169 people invited. Now, my mother's 100, right? She wanted a tiara, so we got her a tiara. And I had done everything to get ready for this party. And long about November, I said to my brother, that's it, I'm done. Nothing else. I'm not doing anything else. It is what it is. Everything is taken care of. Well, I was out of town, and I got the first email from him that said, could I please, one of my nieces was responsible for the program. Could I please contact the niece and get her order of presentations? So I did. And then the next email was, could I please ask her to assign times to each part of the program? And then, you know, my mother's French, and she came from France. So believe it or not, we had invited the mayor from her town in France, who was coming and staying with me. And my brother had asked Joe Schember to give a proclamation to that mayor when she came. So the next email from my brother, this is all coming over like the space of 2 or 3 days. He says, could you contact the mayor in France and have her bring a proclamation for Joe Schember? So now I'm starting to get mad, right? Because I said I was done. That was it. And then he got on me about the photographer. I had tried 4 photographers and couldn't find one, so we decided no photographer. And he gave me the name of somebody to contact who I had already contacted, and the woman was busy. So I was really getting a resentment. And I talked to my husband about it because I realized the cause and conditions for me underneath the resentment was self-esteem. because I had grown up as the oldest, able to handle everything and take care of everything, and nothing is too much for me. And it was too much for me, and I didn't want to say no to any of this because it was going to make me seem like I couldn't handle it. So I wrote to him back and I said, I'm sorry, I'm done. And he immediately wrote back and said, no problem, glad you're saying no. Which was a real learning experience for me because I had never said no before under a circumstance like this. And then I went to the last part of, you know, the four-part thing, and a sponsee happened to call me that day about a, you know, a problem du jour, and so I could do the last part, which was resolutely turning to somebody who could help. And I was pleased because I didn't tell him, you know, jump in the creek in a little bit more graphic terms. And I had no amends to make because I was able to step back, figure it out, what was underneath it, and, you know, save myself from making an amend. Another amend was I was having lunch. I had gone to an exercise class with a friend who was a dermatologist, and we were having lunch afterwards. And she had a t-shirt on that said MIT. And I had a t-shirt on that said Columbia. And I knew that she and her kids had graduated from MIT. And I and my son had graduated from Columbia. So I couldn't resist, you know, telling her how brilliant my son was. And afterwards, I just felt sick inside, you know. And I realized it was that old bugaboo of self-esteem. You know, it just bothered me right away. And then the last issue, well, I have actually four, but in the interest of time, since I have two steps to cover here, and you're probably bored with all this, I'm going to tell you about one that happened yesterday. You know, everybody knows my husband died last November, and I'm now faced with kind of a fork in the road. I have to decide, do I go left, which is kind of a, and I'm not going to get into the details, but is it a safe, it's a safe path, or do I go right, which is kind of a scary situation, but much more fun. And so, so I woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning and I said, you know, I'm doing this darn thing for Kevin. Let me do a written 10th step on this. So I did a written 10th step and I was able to identify seven areas of fear. So it was 6 o'clock in the morning. I texted my sponsor because she gets up really early. I said, you up? She said, yes. So I called her. And I went through the whole thing with her, you know. And she said, well, she said, I know you're going to go right. She said, but what you need is you need to be brave and you need to have courage. And I said, you know, yeah, thanks. Where am I going to get that? Do I go to the bank and, you know, ask for a, you know, or do I go to Wegmans and get a pound of courage? Or, you know, do I go on eBay and buy used courage? I mean, I don't know. And it was kind of funny because we both knew what the answer is, and that is that you pray for courage and you pray for bravery. And that's what I did. And believe me, it's out of my mind now. It's gone, you know. I'm not worrying about it anymore. So I say that because for me, no matter how much time I have, issues still come up and I still need a sponsor and I still need to talk to people and I still need to have, you know, a posse of people that I can call or grab one of you and say, you know, this is what's going on. Help me sort out my thinking. So you're never really too old, either chronologically or time in AA, to seek counsel. So the big book says on page 91 in chapter Working with Others. Well, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it basically says our first objective is always to develop self-restraint. And for me, that's never sending an email that I'm uncomfortable with for 24 hours. You know, don't respond to a phone call that I'm uncomfortable with unless I talk to somebody. All those things, because my first thought when I'm disturbed is almost always wrong, and it doesn't have to be my first action, you know. And I said, the step also talks about considering our day and not admitting to take due note of things well done. So that can be as simple as, you know, I didn't drink today. I went to a meeting. I talked to another alcoholic. You know, I worked with a newcomer. Whatever. Joe McHugh, in the book The Steps We Took, which I unfortunately didn't bring with me, says, the excitement of recovery is that it goes on forever. A person who is in a growth pattern can look back on his life every so often and see that he is living in a world he didn't live in even a year before. And I found that to be true. I was given by my brother a red leather journal when I first got sober, and every year on my AA anniversary I write in about what character defects are really active, what I'm doing about them, where I am with my program. And I can see, going back through the years, how things that bothered me even 10 years ago don't bother me now. And a lot of that is step 10. And we know also that the promises come out of step 10. Let me see where they are. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. This is the 10-step promise, not the promises. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we will recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us with any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. And I think I mentioned before I had to get the alcohol out of my house early on for probably a couple years. So, you know, I don't want to say keep alcohol around your house if it's a problem, but I do now, and it doesn't bother me. I don't leave it in front of me, but I don't get it all out of the house either. Let me just say one more thing, and then I'm going to go on to step 11 so I don't go over here. I have a big book sponsorship guide that I use now a lot. It's 30 pages. It comes all from the big book, and I use it when I sponsor somebody. And it has a very nice daily 10-step inventory that's with it. You do it every night. What I do is, when I have a sponsor who gets on the 10th, with sponsor who gets on the 10th step, I do it with her every night for like 2 weeks, and then we go over it together. And it's just a way to get started. And for me, it's always the same liabilities, always. You probably know them all by now. So step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. So I am not a saint. We are not saints. The two words in this step that are important for me are sought and improve. And if I give myself credit for anything in this, it's that I'm a seeker. I'll try just about anything. I had this huge Catholic background. I went to St. Jude's in Villa. At Villa, we started every class with a prayer. We said the prayers in English. If you took French, you said it in French. You took Latin. We had a saint for everything. St. Jude's for hopeless causes, St. Francis for the animals, et cetera. There's one for travel, St. Christopher, I think. Coupled that with my father, who went to Mass and Communion every day, I was really inculcated in Catholicism. I didn't grab hold of it, but I didn't reject it either. It was just like something that was there. What I did when I came into AA is I sat down one day and I closed my eyes and I said, okay, think about what your vision is of God. What does God look like to you? And, you know, I'm sure everybody has their own vision, but for me, it was a man, not an old man, but not a young man either, sitting in a rocking chair with a flannel bathrobe, holding a child and rocking a child. And that's what I think of when I envision God. My concept of God has not really changed. What has changed as a result of this step is my relationship with God. I still look at him, though, as kind of a kind, forgiving, merciful person. I never really thought of him as a punishing person. I love what Chuck C. says. He says, I don't really understand God, but he understands me. The beauty of AA is that there is really no right or wrong way to acquire a relationship with God. There's no test or no stamping of the hand, you know, when you acquire a relationship with God. You know, there's, what, 30 people here? There's probably 30 different types of relationship with God. You can use whatever conception you have or you don't have, you know, no matter how limited it is. The chapter to the agnostics says that when that chapter was written, probably half the people who came into AA were either agnostics or atheists. But somewhere in the book it talks about the fact that God does not make too hard terms for us. God does not make too hard terms for us. So I say to myself, is it hard to come here? No. Is it hard to sit among people that love you and that understand you? No. Is it hard to love them? No. Is that a hard term? No. Is it hard to eat Kevin's chocolate cake with chocolate strawberries on it? No. So, God does really not make too hard terms if we seek him. I know that the concept of God bothers some people. And for me, I try not to flaunt it, but I try not to minimize it either. My goal when I work with a sponsee is never to water down the big book, to try to stick to the big book as much as possible. But I am aware of the fact that there are people with other views, and AA is that broad highway. There's a place for every one of us here. The big book on page 28, there's a solution, says, the distinguished American psychologist William James, in his book, Varieties of Religious Experience, I wonder if that's conference approved. My group would have a group conscience to discuss that. Indicates a multitude of ways in which men have discovered God. We have no desire to convince anyone that there is only one way by which faith can be acquired. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living Creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try it. It reminds me of a sponsee I had one time. The big book says, what seemed at first a flimsy reed, talking about the relationship with God, has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. My sponsee, Diane, she's dead now. She's been dead for a number of years. She was about 20 years older than me, maybe even more. And she was a very interesting woman. She asked me one day to have lunch with her, and I did, and she asked if I would be her sponsor. And I said, don't you have a sponsor? Because I find sometimes people want to change sponsors just because they don't like what their current sponsor is telling them. And I would tell them the same thing. And she said, well, I finished my fourth step, and I drove up to my sponsor's door to do the fifth step with her, and I couldn't do it. And I said, well, what do you think was the problem? And she said, well, she has no sense of humor. So I ultimately did sponsor her. She was an amazing woman. She was the first woman architect to graduate from Columbia, and she was on the Olympic fencing team when she was younger, and she was just an amazing person. She was a Jewish woman. And she and I had lots of conversations about God, but to her, God was like out there, and she'd say, yeah, there's a God out there, but it has nothing to do with me. I don't want to talk about it. You know, I believe in him, but, you know, it's not for me. And in my group, we have step and big book meetings at 12 noon, and the leader is allowed to choose the prayer at the end. And it's either the Serenity Prayer or the Our Father. And we will all hold hands, and then the leader announces which prayer. And I noticed that when we said the Our Father, she just, you know, clamped her teeth together and didn't say anything. And so one day I asked her about it, and she said, you know, I'm Jewish. That's a Christian prayer. I don't say the Our Father. And I said, okay, Diane. I said, you know what? Just think about it line by line. And if you find that there's any line in there that you can agree with, then just say that one line, you know. And I watched her, and over a year or two, by the end of time, she was saying the entire prayer. You know, she had enough open-mindedness to be able to think about it. And she eventually got Alzheimer's. But she kept coming, and her family would see that she got to a meeting every day. And she would, when it would come be her turn to share, she would say, you know, I don't know who I am. I don't know why I'm here, but I belong here. And she had lost the power to read towards the end. And so we would go around the room and everybody would read a paragraph and it would be her turn and it would be just so painful. But I was so proud of my group because they just let her take whatever time she needed to get through that paragraph, you know. And I'm gonna cry thinking about it. So I came into AA to get sober. I didn't know I was going to meet all these teachers, all these great teachers. And Diane was really one of them. I just want to mention one thing that I misinterpreted in the big book about this step, and it's in the chapter Into Action. I always thought that it said, what we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on our spiritual condition. But if that's what it said, I would be in trouble because some days my spiritual condition is crappy. But what it says is, what we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our daily, of our spiritual condition. So, I've got a lot more to go here. So, prayer, my specific practice is I say the seventh step prayer on my knees every morning. I used to give a whole litany of my character defects, and then I figured, you know, I was just repeating the same thing. It was getting rote. God knew what they were. I didn't need to go through them again. I used to always pray not to drink. I still pray every morning, you know, please help me not to drink. I pray if I'm afraid, but sometimes I have to be reminded of that. I pray if I need to change sponsors, because my ego would have me pick the wrong sponsor. I pray before a difficult conversation, and oftentimes I'll pray before speaking to a sponsee, because I don't have all the answers. You know, all I can do is call you back. And they say prayer is the path when the path is not clear. I got a lot more here, but let me just say one other thing, since I was talking about Diane and the Our Father. The Our Father has taken on such meaning to me since I've come into these rooms. It's really like an AA prayer now. When it says Our Father, you know, I think my Father, your Father, our Father, that means we're brothers and sisters. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, meaning it's not my will, it's God's will, and that my life is really none of my business. Give us this day is one day at a time. Our daily bread, give us this day our daily bread. For me, that's, you know, I have everything I need today. I don't have to worry about the future. Forgive us our trespasses is the fourth step. You know, that's where I started to learn forgiveness. Lead us not into temptation. For me, the temptation is alcohol. And amen is so be it. And I was in, a number of years ago, I was in Poland. And I was in Krakow and Warsaw. And I took a train from Krakow to Warsaw. It might have been the reverse. I can't remember now. And I looked up in AA Intergroup Europe where there was an AA meeting. And they gave the directions, you know, the location. And I called a taxi and because I wanted to go to a meeting. And the taxi took me, and it was out in the country, and it was, he stopped at a building, and it was this big, I knew it was some kind of facility, but I didn't know what it was. It was like long and low. And so I said to the taxi cab driver, you know, come back one hour, come back, hoping he would, because it was out in the middle of nowhere. And I went in, and the people just seemed kind of odd, and I wasn't really sure where, what kind of facility it was, and I kept asking where the AA meeting was, and they would tell me, you know, they would point down a hall, and then down another hall, and down another hall, one of those kind of things. And I finally got to a room, and I walked in, and it was a room about three-quarters of the size of this room, and it had a great big, like, boardroom table. And it was all men. It was a men's meeting. And I explained, you know, and they couldn't have been nicer, you know. They said, sit down, you know, in Polish. They all brought me tea. And I didn't understand one word. But I felt safe being there. And in the end, when they held hands, and all those men in their deep baritone voices said the Our Father, I just broke into tears. I just felt safe, you know. And it didn't matter that it was a men's meeting or that I was in Poland. It just, I was safe from alcohol. So I'm going to stop there to leave a little time for questions.
Thanks, Patricia. Mm-hmm. So now we'd like to open things up for questions. If you have a question for Patricia, raise your hand.
As always, that was wonderful, Patricia. Thanks.
Thanks, Paige.
When working the 10th step, do you ever consider making amends to yourself?
You know, I don't think about that, and I don't really know a reason why I should. Not that I think I was, I don't know. It just never occurred to me. I don't see anything wrong in doing that, and I know a lot of people suggest it. You know, maybe I just haven't evolved enough yet. I don't know.
Yeah. Who else has a question? Hi.
Hi, Jim. I'm going to his doctor next week for cataract surgery.
Right. You should be asking me questions.
Yeah.
Anyways, my question is, you seem to travel a lot.
Yeah.
And you go to meetings in different countries. And we've done the same thing. And we've always been really welcomed. Mm-hmm. Have you had that same experience?
Yes, I have. I'll tell you one experience, though. I was invited to go, maybe I mentioned this, I was invited to go to the country of Bulgaria for a year. And before I signed a contract, I checked to be sure that they had AA meetings in Bulgaria. And they had one in the capital of Bulgaria, Sofia. And it was a one-hour train ride from where I was going to be. I was going to be in Blagoevgrad, which was at the bottom of the country, and the meeting was at the top. And I said, well, I can do that. It's on a Saturday. I'll just devote Saturday to taking the train up, going to the meeting, and coming back. And after I signed the contract, that meeting folded. And there was no meetings in Bulgaria, the country of Bulgaria. And God bless my sweet husband, because every time I got 3 or 4 days off in a row and we could find an AA conference somewhere, we took one of those cheap airlines, you know, EasyJet or Ryanair or whatever, and we went to Turkey, we went to Ireland, we went to Malta, we went to Germany, we went wherever. That was what I did to stay sober for that year. So, but yeah, people are so welcoming, yeah.
Who else has a question?
My buddy Leslie.
Yeah. Hi, Patricia. And thank you so much. Once again, a really rich, full going over of those two steps.
Thank you.
But my question is this. You know, you talked about a routine and how you develop your relationship with God, but my question is kind of simple, I think. Do you, in any manner of routine, either daily or periodically, engage in any prolonged period of meditation or stillness or some kind of communication like that with the God of your understanding?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I'm sorry I didn't get to that. You know, we have a good meditation meeting here on 26th Street, if you haven't been, which is wonderful. My group also has a meditation meeting once a week. I prefer the one here because you meditate for 10 minutes. My group's is 30 minutes, and frankly, that's a little long for me. I have a centering prayer app on my phone if I can't get to a meeting, which you can program to be a meditation from anywhere from 1 minute to 60 minutes. You program the gongs, the whole thing. If anybody wants to know the more specifics, I'd be glad to do that. And I participate in something at my church back home. We have a Saturday Zoom meeting where six of us will read whatever's in the Catholic Church that week. And it's a practice called Lectio Divina, which, we read like part of the what's going to be discussed in church, and then we meditate, and then we pick a phrase from it, and then we meditate, and then we all share it, and then we, it's an hour thing. And in addition to that, if there's nothing big going on in the readings, we read, like the lives of the saints, Henri Nouwen, a lot of people know him. He's a Dutch Jesuit who has a lot of podcasts. Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't get to that. I had a whole section on meditation, but maybe I'll be a favorite speaker another time and can get to that.
Oh, but that would be lovely. Patricia, thank you, too, for, finding it, what it sounds like you do is you found a way to weave, the spirituality of Alcoholics Anonymous into the religious practice that was comfortable, and then take it to the next level, and I so appreciate hearing about it, so thank you.
Let me just say one thing about that. I called this nun a couple of years ago. She was 90, and she was an AA, and I knew she gave spiritual direction, and I wanted her to see if she was available for spiritual direction, because the problem I have is consistency. Some days I'm really good, some months I'm really good, and then I can hit a barren period for a while. And she was very infirm and couldn't do spiritual direction, but she said her problem was consistency, too. And I kind of felt good about that, because I thought, here she's like really good at it, and she's having the same problem I do. And so, throw that out for what it's worth.
Thanks very much. Any other questions? If not, then Patricia, thank you very much.
Okay, Greg, thank you. See you next week.